Max Verstappen. What a weekend for you, Max. Another win from pole in front of your Dutch fans. Just please sum up what this means to you.
Yeah, it was not a straightforward race, you know, so then I think it's extra rewarding to win the race.
And so we're going to get racing again. Hamilton ahead of Verstappen.
Surprisingly, we had a really good restart, and then with the extra top speed we have over Mercedes, I could get a run into turn one.
And away we go then. We're going green, and Verstappen has got a decent toe behind Hamilton, and Verstappen is going wheel to wheel down the main straight with Hamilton, and Verstappen is ahead going into turn one. Lewis Hamilton's been overtaken by Max Verstappen right at the start.
It's nice, of course, to see all the crowd and the craziness, and I appreciate it a lot. Of course, this was a very special weekend for me to see all of these fans come out and support me. It's been incredible.
For the second year running here at Zandvoort, Max Verstappen wins the Dutch Grand Prix.
What an absolutely brilliant Dutch Grand Prix. The atmosphere was fantastic before we started, and then, well, the race from lap 44 onwards served up an absolute peach. Now, we've got no Damon and Natalie this weekend, so this week's F1 Nation is a very international cast. I'm delighted to say that we're joined by, can we call him local hero, Allard Kalf from Viaplay?
yeah, call me whatever you like.
We've got Julien Biot from Auto Hebdo.
Hi, how are you doing?
And we've got Christian Minnat from motorsportmagazine.com.
Hello.
Now, guys, what a phenomenal race today. Allard, let's start with you. How do you sum up what we've just seen?
Electric, fantastic, mind-blowing. I thought after last year it couldn't be any better, but it could. I mean, the weather was great, the atmosphere was great, and the race was actually a lot better than last year's race because of all the action. So for me, it's just, being Dutch today makes me proud, not just because of Max, but because of everything. And also, you know, I just love it.
Yeah, it's definitely been a festival atmosphere, hasn't
it?
We're joined now by the winning team principal, Christian Horner. Christian, that was a phenomenal win. Do you think you had that one covered come what may? If there had been no safety cars and it had been a straight fight between you guys and Mercedes on a one-stopper, yeah, and as it obviously panned out as well?
I generally think we did. I think the two-stop was just a quicker race today. And I think, you know, had it played out on the standard race, I think Mercedes, we'd have conceded track position to Lewis, but his tyres, those hard tyres, would have been pretty old by the time we'd have got onto another set of softs. So I think the pass that Max made in the end, he would have done anyway. But as it turned out, it was strategically quite a tricky race with the VSC. We had to convert our strategy. We went on to the hard tyre. And then obviously the full safety car at the end there to stop Max from the lead of the Grand Prix in front of this crowd. I was surprised Mercedes stopped George, because that gave us a clean shot at Lewis with a tyre advantage. So and then Max got the move done early and controlled the rest of the race. So a phenomenal performance.
So do you think that buffer, had George not stopped, would have caused you enough problems? Because if you look at the way Max actually got past Lewis, he seemed like he was unstoppable.
I don't think anything would have stopped him today. It might have slowed him down a bit, but I was just surprised strategically they didn't have keep George out there as a rear gunner to try and, you know, win Lewis a bit of time while they were trying to get his tyres back up to temperature. But it worked out well for us. And, you know, with all the pressure of this massive crowd, I mean, Max was phenomenal this weekend. He, again, made another big step as a world champion this year. You know, he's cool, he's collected. I mean, the amount of pressure and expectation on him this weekend, and he's just kept it in a bubble. You know, he's just kept working with his team and managed to, you know, block out all the distraction. And the pole lap yesterday was sensational, particularly after losing a lot of Friday. So his recovery was absolutely incredible.
Sure, it's a team effort, and you have helped keep him in that bubble. Have you done things differently just to protect him from all of the commitments and the razzmatazz?
Things to a minimum, to keep him focused on the job, and it's just another race. There's just a lot more expectation at this race. So, you know, we've just kept, you know, distraction to him to a minimum and just kept him in the zone of working with a group of people that he's here to deliver with.
Yeah, Christian, Toto told us that their simulation said if there wouldn't have been any VSC or safety car, you would have come out about 8 seconds behind Lewis with Max and would have catched him between 2 to 6 laps to the end. What did your simulation say?
Our simulation said we beat him by 15 seconds.
So there was already optimistic yesterday in qualifying.
So yeah, maybe he needs to relook at the numbers.
Christian, just final one. You can win at Spa last weekend. You can win here at a very different racetrack. Are we going to see another 2013 when Sebastian Vettel won every race after the summer break? Is there anything that can stop you?
Yeah, there's many things that can go wrong at the end of the day. So, you know, nothing's done until mathematically it's done. We're in a great position. But, you know, we just got to keep our heads down. And, you know, the constructors has as much weight to us as the drivers this year. And, you know, we're in a good position in both. But you've just got to keep taking it one race at a time.
Christian, many thanks for your time. Great job. Great job today. Thank you. Let's just break down what Christian said there, guys. I thought it was interesting that Christian called out Mercedes and said, surprised they pitted George, because the buffer would have at least made Max's day a little bit harder.
Because Toto, I think we asked a similar question to Toto during his press call, and he said that the tyre advantage Max would have had just would have meant that he would have cleared the two Mercedes maybe in two laps instead of one. And then maybe there was the risk that both Mercedes would start tumbling down and maybe under threat from Leclerc and others. So it's better to split strategies and give the guy in front track position, because this is a difficult track to overtake. So, but I think George actually requested new tires, soft tires. So he shows some initiative there. I don't know exactly what happened with these things go so fast. It's so easy to second guess, and you know, we're always right after the race. But I think they made the right call in splitting the strategy and giving and leaving Hamilton on track and in front.
And with this discussion, you can see that everything that happened with Ferrari during the last weeks or the last races is just, hindsight is a beautiful thing. Everyone can be wrong in the strategy. I think probably Red Bull has the best strategy team. They take brave decisions and are right most of the time.
Now, Julian, look, your read on everything that happened there. And do you think Max had it covered come what may?
I'm not so sure, because as Christian just mentioned, I think the simulation Mercedes had it was going to be touch and go between Lewis and Max at the end. Max would have had fresher tyres, obviously. But here it's, notorious that it's a difficult track to overtake. Despite the extended DRS zone, which helped, because we've seen overtaking moves down into turn one, but it would have been a thrilling conclusion. But it was still a thrilling conclusion with the VSC and the safety car, of course, and Mercedes decided to split strategy to give Lewis track position, and because also his medium tires were like almost super fresh, only four or five lap old. So why would you change? Because if you change, you're going to lose track position, and you're not in Silverstone like we saw Ferrari blundered with Charles Leclerc earlier this year, for instance. Here, it's so hard to overtake that it made sense to take that gamble. And Toto told us that they were willing to take risk because they thought the win was on. It was going to be super tight, but the win was on. But Max was brilliant, you know, whatever happened, because he had it, you know, under control. His restart was just so beautiful. No DRS, no nothing, super smooth on the outside, no tangling, no nothing.
I was quite surprised. Allard, I don't know if you were as well. I was quite surprised that Lewis went as early as he did at that restart. I thought he might have waited until further down the pit straight.
Well, this morning we had the Formula 2 race where the leader waited until basically start-finish, and I thought he would, well, maybe not there, but I mean, at least there's two things you know. There's no way you're going to get past before the first corner, and the other thing you know, it's going to be chaos behind you. So I would have started a lot later than he did. And I don't agree on the white tyre, the Mercedes. I think the Mercedes simulation is definitely wrong, because I don't think they were going to make it to the end on that tyre, no way. I mean, I was talking on the grid to three teams, and they all said, steer clear of the white tyre, because it does look good, but it will hit a cliff, and then it's much sooner than you think. So it's. I was actually surprised they went for it. Even Red Bull, I thought, what are they doing on the white tyre? Because I was, you know, I was told it was a basic no-go.
Well, it was their pace on the white tyre, the Merckx pace on the white tyre, that got them in the game at all.
Yeah, I think that was a surprising part of this race, because
exactly.
Nobody
thought that was going to happen. But then how long were they going to last at that pace? That's the big question mark.
And I think it's probably the opposite to Hungary, because if you remember what happened in Hungary, everyone was blaming Ferrari for trying the hard tire. And here, before we went into this race, it looked like it would be the same. I was talking to Helmut Marko on Friday after the practice sessions, and he said, yeah, we just wanted to get rid of the hard tire on Friday. And now it seemed like it worked. And then I'm not 100% with you. We never will know how it would have panned out. And
it would have been a fight, that's for sure. Yeah.
So, but that was very, very surprising how they switched on the hard tire. It didn't take too long. It lasted pretty well, but we don't know how long it would have lasted.
Now, look, Alon, I know you haven't got all day. You've got the rucksack on, the bike is over there. Before you go, I just want your perspective. You've been in and around Formula One for many decades. Just the impact that Max Verstappen is having on Dutch motorsport. That's my question to you.
Well, I'm trying to find something to relate to you as a Brit. And I can't really find anything at the moment. I mean, Johan Cruyff, one of the best football players ever, had an impact on this country like Max is doing. I mean, just think, over 300,000 people here this weekend because of one man. Because of his race wins, his world championship, his attitude, his personality, gets all this going. I mean, I am absolutely baffled. I don't know about you. I mean, and it's one guy. I mean, yeah. I've went through the Michael Schumacher Mansell Mania in England, Michael Schumacher in Germany. That was big, but we're only 17 million in this country.
Do you think this is bigger than the Schumacher Mania in Germany?
Well, if you percentage wise, I would say yes, but yeah. Because Germany is a lot. I mean, Michael was just, you know, yeah. I don't think it's bigger yet, but it has all the potential and writing on the wall, doesn't it?
Yeah, he is a superstar. There's no doubt about that.
And the funny thing is, early 90s, we had his dad who arrived. And I kept saying, Jos was the Max of his generation. Eh? I think Jos was like 52 races before he went to Brazil and raced at Benetton. I mean, Jos was on the podium on his seventh or eighth Grand Prix. So Jos was like the rising star. And even then in Holland, Jos was a superstar, and there was like this whole thing. It's just we didn't have the people running the track thinking, well, maybe we should capitalize on that. And maybe times are changing and it's all different. But his dad was like a megastar, and this is just like, they just carried on. I mean, the name Verstappen in Holland is just, I don't know, it's brilliant.
Yeah, it is brilliant indeed. Well, look, Alain,
what do you say? What do you say?
It's just like Pilote in France.
And Minat in Germany, right?
Hopefully.
Yeah, but I mean, you think about, sports people always, there is always something, eh? You want to, but think about it, you know, Roger Federer for Switzerland, eh? You know, things like that. They're really iconic. And Max, well, I'm not going to say he's iconic yet, but he will be.
He's getting that way, isn't he? Look, yeah. Alon, it's been wonderful to have you on the show.
No, thank you very much
for your time. So, guys, that was an ice cool Max Verstappen today, wouldn't you say?
I like it, ice cool killer.
Just everything that was thrown at him, him and that team are just working in harmony, aren't they?
Sometimes we forget that Max is only 24. I mean, turning 25 in a couple of weeks' time. But he's been around already for 8 years. But he keeps on growing. He keeps on finding new ways to be more efficient and smooth and not getting angry. I guess when you have the RB, you know, 18, it helps stay very calm and very, very confident, because that car, maybe in qualifying, the Ferrari or the Merc can get close. And we saw what happened on Saturday, like the top three were covered by less than a tenth. In a normal race circumstances, no one can touch them at the moment. So, but definitely Max, you know, keeps finding new steps. And as you mentioned, high school, very, very relaxed. Dr. Marko told us that the outside pressure, the 300,000 people,
It's water off a duck's back, yeah. Isn't it?
Exactly. Is. So this is very impressive.
And just look at the gap between Verstappen and Checo Perez.
Yeah, that's something we've seen quite often recently. Checo was pretty strong at the start of the season. Max didn't like the understeer of the RB18 so much, but I wouldn't say they developed the car for Max. I would say they just made the car faster, and Max is able to capitalize on that more than Checo. So there have been some stories that Checo was trying a different specification in Spa and doing this this weekend as well. But I think it has nothing to do with that. It's just that Max knows how to drive the RB18 now. It fits his driving style a bit better.
There's our friend of the show, Alex Albon, behind us. Actually, Alex, can I say, last week you were saying it's going to be difficult at Zandvoort and you were looking ahead to Monza. So just as our regular Albono slot now on the pod, just are you surprised by the pace?
I was, actually. I have to be honest with you. I felt like it was going to be a tougher race than it actually was. The wind died down today, which plays a big part in for our performance to get us closer to the midfield. And, you know, without the VSCs and the... I still don't understand this whole Yuki thing. He was in, he was out. I passed him like 3 or 4 times on track. I think we could have been, maybe not points, but fighting for the point. Instead, it's P12. It's one of them annoying ones. It happens a lot for us where everything was executed well, we did everything well, but nothing. So off we go to Monza.
Off we go to Monza, and you think you'll be, or at least on paper, you should be stronger there.
On paper, yes. I don't want to make it seem like this, guys, if we don't get points, it's going to be disappointing. But that's it. We're expected to do better than here, and if we already finished P12 here...
What kind of music do you like? Because I feel that we might need a jingle music for the Alex Albon slot now that we need every week.
Okay. A song. I like Angels by Robbie Williams.
Okay.
I'm a karaoke man. They actually did make me, when I was at Red Bull, they did make me sing it on a bus, like a team bus.
Was it embarrassing?
Of course, yeah. I hate that stuff. That was my initiation. So,
crikey. Yeah. Well, look, very well done today. I know it wasn't points. And look forward to celebrating another point or two at Monza next weekend.
I look forward to being on the podcast again.
Alex, great stuff. Thank you. Let's talk Ferrari. Charles Leclerc, first of all, he starts the race second, finishes third. On paper, not too bad a result, but I think he'll be very disappointed with how it panned out, just in terms of raw pace of his racing car.
It's hard to analyze with all the crazy stuff that happens. And I almost forgot what happened during the first 45 laps of the race. Of course, I remember the terrible pit stop of Carlos Sainz. But, he did pit right before the VSC when there was this indecision when Yuki Tsunoda stopped and then got back going again. But again, it felt like Ferrari, you know, jumped to the gun just... you know, that big, too quick, too early, if you compare to what Red Bull and Mercedes did. I don't know if they expected Yuki to go back out on track or whatever, but yeah, the end result was that, again, Ferrari was just a bit out of sync, and it always seemed that way with them. For me, it's more a question of confidence. They don't have the confidence, so they're always second-guessing what they're doing. And when you have that, you know, that moment of hesitation, the moment has gone and you end up making a mistake.
Christian, what did you make of the pace of Ferrari today? It seemed good on the softer compounds, not so good on the harder compounds, but overall lacking to both Mercedes and Red Bull. Is that fair?
I would say yes, but somehow it was expected, because if you look at the Mercedes qualifying pace, even though I'm not with Toto's prediction yesterday, if Sergio wouldn't have spun in the last corner, because his prediction was pretty brave yesterday as well, that Lewis could have fought for the pole position. I disagree with that, but Mercedes was really close on one lap, and we know if they are close on one lap, they are usually probably a bit faster in race pace. So that was a funny story yesterday. You remember in the press conference, our French colleague Fred Ferrer asked the three drivers if Mercedes could be a threat in the race with their pace. And Max just answered with one word: no. That would have been really funny if they would have had a nice battle today, but the Ferrari drivers, they knew that Mercedes would be a bigger threat to them. So for me, it was not so surprising that they had problems with Mercedes as well, but you could look at it both ways. Okay, they had problems with Mercedes, but on the other side, they were so much closer than in Spa last week. So yeah, they have lost out a bit in the development battle against Red Bull, probably also against Mercedes, but they are not as bad as they might look.
So what about the pit stop? I mean, Julian, you've already commented on Ferrari strategically, but when Carlos Sainz came into the pits, the tyres weren't ready.
How is that possible? I know it happened to Red Bull and Danny Ric lost the race in Monaco in 2016, but how is that possible that a tyre is missing? Maybe Christian knows.
Yeah, we were talking to Mattia Binotto after the race, and he tried to explain it.
I tried.
They tried, yeah. Yeah, they saw that Mercedes was preparing a pit stop as well, and they feared that they would undercut Carlos Sainz. So what they did is they just reacted, or tried to react, and pit Carlos earlier, so to avoid the undercut. But I completely agree. This is probably one of the biggest mistakes Ferrari has done this season, because you know how long it takes to prepare the pit stop, and then you should know when your driver is in turn X, Y, Z, whatever. We cannot do it anymore.
Isn't this the point, though, that all teams make strategic errors? We've seen Mercedes had an issue at Monaco with Bottas, do you remember? Then, of course, Red Bull with Danny Ric, and I remember Weber at the Nürburgring back in the day as well. Every team has issues, but you learn from them. And it shouldn't happen again, at least not in the near future.
Yeah, exactly. It can happen 5 years later because you have like 100 races.
But the issue seems to me that we are getting some kind of issue in the pit lane or on the pit wall at Ferrari every race. And that is what is so frustrating for them and for fans of Ferrari as well.
But it feels like they have a huge monkey on their back, which is all like a dark cloud hovering over their heads all the time. And they are not in a serene environment. Like, even when they make the right call, it's almost as if they are wondering, are we making the right call? And then you lose momentum, you lose just this sharp decision that we see with Red Bull or Mercedes, that when something happens, it feels like they have a plan for every scenario, A, B, C, D. Whatever happens, that Red Bull, they don't even think. Ferrari overthinks. And you say Mattia tried to explain what happened, and you use the word react. Ferrari is always reacting. You should not be reacting. You should take the initiative, or you should not overthink. You just do your thing, and because you need to be confident in yourself when you do that. And it feels like, for me, the main issue with Ferrari is confidence, because the people are, in F1, people are super qualified and skilled. But it's more like we go back to the human side, which is fascinating.
But just go 1 week back. They were brave with the decision they took with Charles Leclerc for the fastest lap. It didn't work. Also,
the but confidence can also thwart your execution. It's not only your decision making, but it's also you might take the right decision, but then if you execute it poorly, it's the same end result.
Yeah, I think it's a different. It's a really difficult topic, because from the outside, they're looking a lot worse than they are. Also on the pit wall. Imagine you are on the pit wall and you have to take every single decision. So probably there are too many wrong decisions at Ferrari, but for every wrong decision there are like 10 right decisions, and these 10 right decisions we don't see. The other thing I wanted to say on the Ferrari strategy is that you say, okay, it can happen once but not twice or three times or whatever, but then they are not the same mistakes. They are all a bit different. So I'm not trying to. I'm not a Ferrari spokesperson, but I think it's easy from outside. It's easy in hindsight, and it's not always that straightforward if you have to take the decision. But surely they are not up to the Red Bull level.
I absolutely agree. They're not the same mistakes, but the process that leads to the decision making, I think, is the same.
And we all come back to that confidence thing for me.
Individually. Phenomenal brains. I think you may be right. Maybe it's you get to a point, don't you, where you think, help, we have a phenomenal racing car this year, and suddenly, actually, we're in danger of being caught by Mercedes in the Constructors' Championship, who are only 30 points behind. Just remember how excited we were after Australia this year, when Charles Leclerc dominated, and we all genuinely thought that Ferrari were going to have a proper shot at this championship with Charles, and I guess it's not happening, and they need to just reboot and start again. I think it's gone for this year now, so I don't want to see Ferrari do anything from a development point of view that's going to scupper 2023 in any way. I think they now need to focus on 23. They've learnt a lot this year and need to focus on bringing it home next year. That has to be the goal.
Yeah, they should do like what Nico Rosberg did in 2015. You win...
the last three rounds, that was the final three races for Nico, but try to win as many races as you can so you build up that nice momentum heading into the off season, and then you come back, you know, and you try to pick up where you left off.
Yeah, an error-free last seven races is what Ferrari need, and then yes, challenge for the championship next year. Right.
It's getting boisterous.
The party is kicking off, so I'm just looking at everything that's going on in this Red Bull Energy Station. David Coulthard is here. Jos Verstappen is here. Just very quickly, Jos, you were the boss back in the day. This is Jos
Not
Verstappen.
I was just to Max. I'm happy with it.
Is this bigger than last year, do you think?
I don't know. I think about it's very big. I mean, but I think this race was more exciting with all the safety cars and virtual safety cars. So, I mean, it was exciting till 10 laps before the end.
You must be very proud.
Always am.
Thanks, Jos. Oh, Jos the boss.
Jos the boss.
Now, that was the Red Bull party, the Max Verstappen party. Leaving the energy station, they all fly Air Max. They'll be flying Air Max back to Monaco.
Okay,
that's what I've learnt.
Are you flying Air Max? Or?
No, sadly not. I've tried very hard. But look at him. I'm just watching him go away. People asking for selfies. What we were saying earlier about him being very cool, very patient.
I hope he doesn't get too kind, because I like angry Max. I like fiery Max.
I think we're going to get angry and fiery Max on the racetrack forever. That's him in a car, isn't it?
He has mellowed.
But let's look further down the top 10 now. And there's a man called Fernando Alonso in P6. Now, he started the race 13th. He's as guaranteed as you can get in this sport to anyone who's just going to maximize what the car can do. If the car is good enough for X, he will deliver X time and time and time again.
He will deliver more than X, because when we saw him in the mix zone after the race, he say our simulation, our best, most optimistic simulation was P9 from P13 on the grid.
Under promise, over deliver.
Yeah, but Fernando is the king at that. Every lap he is doing is the best of his life.
Yeah, 120%.
But tell me, how did Alonso end up P6? What was the key? Was it that very early pit stop to the hard tire?
Yeah, I think that was one very important part of it. And, I mean, he had a good start. Then the pace was good. He overtook both AlphaTauri, if I'm right. He was in really good position, and then just pulled the trigger with that early stop to the hard tire. And the hard tire, I think he was one of the first ones who tried the hard tire, and it worked out pretty well. And we were talking about tires earlier. It wasn't no guarantee that the hard tire would work that well. So good race, good start, nice maneuvers against the AlphaTauris, came to the pits at the right time, took the right tire. So, and then the rest of the race was pretty decent, at least, as well.
Look, a word on the performance of Alpine, because Esteban Ocon coming home in the points as well. The team
ninth.
Now have a 24-point lead over McLaren in the Constructors' Championship. It all seems to be coming together, at least on track for Alpine.
Right from the beginning, the performance, the raw performance, has been, you know, always there and thereabouts, depending on some weekends were, you know, harder than others. But the car on some weekends was almost on par with the Mercedes, so like a, you know, third fastest car on the grid, but which means they can improve from where they were last year.
And that car seems to be working on every kind of track.
McLaren was hoping that Sandford is better for them, because it was a disaster for them in Spa. The Alpine worked out pretty well, so they expected to be ahead of them here in Sandford, but at least in qualifying it was the case. But in the race, Alpine was faster, executed the race well.
And Alpine has two very solid drivers. Very, you know, there is not a big discrepancy. I don't know what's happening with, you know, Daniel Ricciardo has been, you know, still been troubling for the past 18 months. But at least, let's say, Ocon and Alonso are sort of on par, depending on which weekend we're talking about. So you have two drivers scoring maybe not massive points each, but at least scoring consistently every weekend. So that's also helping a lot.
Look, Norris was once again, I thought, phenomenal this weekend. Great in qualifying to P7. He said he absolutely nailed it. Christian, I would love to get your thoughts on what you think has happened to Daniel Ricciardo. Where's the pace gone?
If I would know that, I probably wouldn't be sitting here, because McLaren tried really everything with Daniel, and Daniel tried everything, but they just didn't have a conclusion. They reached a dead end, and that's why Daniel is leaving at the end of the year. This weekend was a bit strange because I think he was pretty okay, had a pretty decent pace. In qualifying was very unlucky because Lance Stroll put some gravel on the track and he was caught out by that, as Sebastian as well in qualifying. So that's why he was out in Q1, looked a lot worse than he actually was compared to Lando in qualifying. But then in the race, it was just another disaster for him. So I have absolutely no idea what happened to him, and it's a real shame. And I have no explanation, and I was really surprised to see him like that because he was so good at Red Bull. He was not on the level of Max, but close. And when he joined Renault, he needed a bit of time, but not a lot. And then he was so super good.
Yeah, 2020 was a great season. I thought 2018 was a bit underwhelming, but maybe the car was not, you know, as good as it had been earlier in 2018 with Carlos and Nico Hülkenberg.
But then in 2020, he completely destroyed Esteban.
He was a top five driver for me, top five talent. So it's, I don't know, we forget that we're dealing, because we're so used to talk about cars, upgrades, whatever, but we're dealing with human beings. And Formula One is the kind of sport where you cannot afford any slip up. Like if you take football, if you miss the, you know, you can always recover during the game. It's like, whereas in Formula One, if you miss your start, maybe you lose five places and your race is cooked. Whereas I struggle to find any other sport where you have to be on it all the time. And if you are just slightly off, you're like, you know, half a second is massive in Formula One, but for us, it's nothing. So, you know, it could be, I don't want to say it's a mental thing or whatever, but we're dealing with just human emotion. Sometimes it's irrational.
The interesting thing is that the regulations changed so much between last year and this year. So he had two completely different cars at McLaren. So it would be a bit easier to explain if it would have been just a carryover from last year, the car, and you would say, okay, it's the DNA of the car, which doesn't suit his driving style, whatever. Perhaps there's still a DNA in a McLaren car, which translated into the 2022 generation as well, but still it's so different to last year. And that's why we just have absolutely no explanation what happened to him.
Let's hope he can end his time at McLaren on a high. I know he's always been phenomenal. He loves Suzuka like so many other drivers. It would just be great to see him return to one of those tracks that he loves and get a result before he leaves. Look, final thoughts on the race today. Lance Stroll, P10. I very much felt he had the edge over Sebastian Vettel all weekend. Got into Q3. Brought it home in 10th as well. That car definitely races once again better than it qualifies, that Aston Martin.
Yeah, but they tend to fly under, you know, a bit under the radar because we're so caught up with what's happening at the front. Sometimes Lance Stroll, you look at the rankings, you're like, oh, it's just like yesterday in quali, he's in Q3 actually. You didn't realize that. He doesn't strike you right away, but when he's on it, he can be a pretty fast driver and a, you know, pretty good racer when he's on a fine weekend. Then I don't know how the end of the season will pan out for them, but surely they have been knocking at the points on a more consistent basis compared. But they keep scoring very little, you know, whereas Alfa Romeo had big scores at the start of the season, Haas as well, so they are paying their very slow start to the season.
Well, Julian, they're only 4 points behind AlphaTauri in the World Championship. Now, hey, we're not talking about the big positions here. They're battling for eighth place in the Constructors' Championship, but they are edging closer to AlphaTauri, who themselves are only 5 points behind Haas. Mm. So if Aston Martin were to continue this trajectory, you could see them P7 by the end of the season.
Oh, yeah, it's all very, very close. I'd say the top three, maybe the after Mercedes, kind of, I wouldn't say messed up the new regulations, but they are the big losers, I'd say, at least at the front. But from P3 to P10, after five races, I know I was talking with Günther Steiner earlier this weekend, and say, when was the last time you saw the 10 teams scoring points after five races? So it's all like super close, and it's going to be that way until the end of the season. But really, now that we have the pecking order is a bit more established, it's going to be harder, unless we have a crazy race, which can always happen. It will be hard on merit for Aston to catch up, because at the start of the season, especially Alpha, I don't know when was the last time they scored points.
Canada, they had a double points finish in Canada.
Yeah, so it's been a while. And Haas has had a strong start, then a strong summer, but then they have ups and downs. Whereas Aston Martin has been fairly consistent over the past few months, but it's always for little, little points.
Yeah, I wonder if that's what appeals to Fernando Alonso, Christian. One of the reasons he's going there is that he can see the new factory. He's got the contract that he wants, all of that kind of thing. But actually, they are now making progress. You want to be riding a wave as it gets bigger, don't you? You don't want it to be fading out. And I wonder if they're now getting some momentum.
Yeah, the trend is your friend. But I'm not 100% sure if that's the most appealing part for Fernando there.
What do you think is the most appealing part?
To be completely honest, to be away from Alpine. And I don't mean it as mean as it sounds, not against the team, but I think he just feels like he wasn't treated like he should have been treated in all the contractual stuff. And especially with what we know now after all the Piastri saga, you probably can understand him even better. And he knows that from the sporting side, it's probably, it doesn't make such a huge difference because he knows that he won't fight for the championship with Alpine next season. He won't fight for the championship with Aston Martin. And then he's the world champion in explaining the world of sports to us when he always says, it doesn't matter if you finish second, third, 10th, 15th or whatever, as long as you're not winning, it doesn't matter where you finish. And that's exactly his thinking behind. And if he doesn't feel comfortable at Alpine, which seems like, not with the team itself, probably more with the leadership, and he doesn't feel like he gets what he should deserve.
Right, let's talk about Oscar Piastri then. Can we get the French view, first of all, in terms of what happened, what is the feeling in France about Alpine first losing Fernando Alonso and then Oscar Piastri as well?
I think to them, they thought, okay, maybe the contract was not 100% watertight or legally binding or whatever, but they felt since Oscar had started fulfilling some of the provisions in the contract, like doing simulator work, testing with the 2021 car, his involvement sort of made the contract de facto official. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I'm pretty sure this is a weak argument. But to them, there was no issue until McLaren came, with a big offer and then realized, oh, maybe actually I'm a free agent, so I'm able to engage in talks. Now, Oscars, because there are always two sides of the story, so I don't want to say, I'm siding with Alpine or siding with McLaren. It's pretty bad for Alpine. I want to make that clear. It's very, very bad. But they thought that, things were going well until McLaren came with the offer. But it's true that it's a pretty bad look for Alpine. And as I asked Otmar in your press conference, how can you lose a superstar like Fernando and a top prospect like Oscar in 24 hours? It's just, at some point, where does the buck stop?
Do you think, in Otmar Szafnauer's defence, he only arrived at the team in March, and a lot of this was well underway by the time he got there?
I think so, because if you listen to Fernando when he was defending his move to Aston Martin and why he didn't inform Otmar, he actually explained why he didn't inform Otmar and why Otmar had to learn from the press release of Aston Martin. He informed Luca Di Meo and he informed Laurent Rossi before the press release from Aston Martin came out. And why did he inform these two guys and not Otmar? Because he was dealing with them on the contractual side. So I think that tells quite a story in the whole Piastri thing, and that Otmar is the poor guy who has to sit in your press conference.
From the outside, it could look as they tried to play, on both tables, and they ended up losing on both sides, trying to cajole Fernando Alonso and have Piastri place, because Piastri had a deal or had a seat fitting at Williams. I've been told that he had a seat fitting at Williams. He was happy to go there and learn the ropes, just like George. That's what I've been told. Maybe it's, I'm sure Oscar and Piastri's management maybe have, differing opinions on that. But he was happy to do that and learn the ropes like George Russell did before, starring at Mercedes. But it all collapsed when McLaren, I don't know if it's Zach Brown per se, but McLaren made a bold and big offer. We was at first, I think, a reserve driver and then a race seat because they didn't know if Ricciardo was willing to shorten his 3 years there at working. So Alpine was, they understand that they lost on legal grounds, but for them, it's technicalities that the Piastri clan managed to find after the McLaren offer came on the table.
It's an interesting point that you make about McLaren, because they are taking a risk on Piastri.
Oh, yeah.
We know he's good.
Yeah.
F3 champion, F2 champion in consecutive years, but he's yet to drive in a competitive Formula One practice session, let alone qualifying in a race. Is he the next Lewis Hamilton? Could be. But equally, he might just be someone who's very good. We don't yet know. So I think credit to McLaren that they're taking this risk.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember, Stoffel Vendôme was supposed to be a Formula One world champion after winning, I don't know how many championships in the feeder series. They put him in. He ended up against Fernando, which is all, you know, your worst friends or your best enemy when you start in Formula One.
But
and that's why I want to praise Esteban Ocon for doing so well against a guy like him, because he can really outshine you both on and off track. And I think Esteban is holding his ground.
That's a very good point about Ocon. I think this is a very different McLaren to the one
course,
that Stoffel Vendôme was getting involved with.
Much friendlier, much more fun.
Yeah, but they still didn't get Daniel to work there.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
But I think it says quite a lot about the team that they take their responsibility as well. Andrea Seidel said, yeah, we didn't make it work.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, they say they showed that they are a good team for rookies, because with Lando it worked pretty well.
Yeah, but if you look, Sergio Perez didn't work out. Kevin Magnussen didn't work out. Stoffel Vendôme didn't work out. All guys that were in the McLaren Young Driver program, or sort of. So, and Lando is really the first guy to have really pan out and be successful with the team. So there is no guarantee, especially when the guy has never raced a single kilometer.
But he got a good education from Alpine.
Well, oh yeah,
I was happy enough. I attended one of these testing days, because they were testing in Austria, the Red Bull Ring. So, and I was there the whole day, so I saw how much effort they put in this program, which they probably regret now at Alpine. But I will take the risk as well, to be honest. To come back to the original question, he's such a super talent, rookie in Formula 3, won the championship, did the same in Formula 2. Yeah, if someone like Oscar is on the market, you have to take the opportunity, no matter what.
Oh, no, I agree. McLaren was perfectly right. But for sure, Oscar will be... I remember yesterday you were with Toto's during his press call post-qualifying. He said, the boy better be quick. The boy better be quick, because he has, I think, ruffled... I mean, the whole saga has ruffled a few feathers in the paddock and, you know, constructors' programs, loyalty, integrity. Now we know a bit more, so it's not... You know, it's not the case.
And he'd better be quick for his own sake.
Yeah,
because
of course.
Lando Norris
is pretty quick.
Norris is very quick.
And he's, you know, the king of walking. He's been there. He's been, mentored by the team. So it's going to be a very hard environment for him to begin.
My observations of Oscar, having worked very occasionally with him when he was in Formula 2, is that he's very laid back. And I think that will help him. I think help him deal with the pressure, help him deal with any frustrations that will undoubtedly come his way. So I think he's well equipped mentally. I think he's well equipped with ability and talent, because we've seen what he can do. But what's happening at AlphaTauri? Back at Canada, Franz Tost told us emphatically that Pierre Gasly was going to be with the team in 2023. It seems now that it's all changed. Helmut Marko has said that Red Bull will release Pierre Gasly if Alpine meets the payment clauses that are required, the stipulations in the release. And everything I'm hearing, Julian, our French correspondent here on F1 Nation, is he their number one choice to replace Fernando Alonso?
I think we can say that, but there are many factors yet to be assembled for that to happen. Many pieces of the jigsaw puzzle to happen. Starting with, for instance, getting a super license to Colton Herta so he can replace him at AlphaTauri.
Right, I need to stop you there. For listeners who don't know who Colton Herta is, he's a blindingly quick IndyCar driver who drove the 2021 McLaren in Portimao a couple of months ago, impressed the team. He wants to come over. He's 22 years old, very ambitious, but he doesn't yet have the 40 points he needs to get a super license. I think he's on 32.
If all things, go like they are now, at the end of the season, he would be 32.
So it would require the FIA to step in to allow him to get the 40 that he needs. Let's work on the assumption that that is going to happen. Will the various bits of the jigsaw fall into place? If he gets the super license, Colton Herta will go alongside Yuki Tsunoda at AlphaTauri, and Pierre Gasly will go to Alpine. Is that what we think will happen?
Is Yuki Tsunoda staying at AlphaTauri? Because Franz Tost was not adamant during your press conference. I think he will, because I don't think they have someone in the wings. Although Liam Lawson can be quite, impressive on his days in Formula 2. But I don't think they have someone of that caliber behind. And maybe Yuki deserves a third year because, the speed is there. We saw it again in Zandvoort, out-qualifying Pierre Gasly, who was in a bit of a strange, difficult patch this season. And maybe, coming back to Gasly, maybe he needs a change of scenery and to progress, because no disrespect to AlphaTauri, but you're not supposed to stay more than 3 years at AlphaTauri. This is supposed to be a springboard to a bigger team, and clearly Alpine would represent still a better proposition and a better car than the AlphaTauri. So that would be the most likely scenario if all, again, the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle fall together. It's not a done deal yet.
Actually, one final thing. Mick Schumacher, Haas. Do we think Mick will be in Formula 1 in 2023? That's another news story that's been doing the rounds here in Zandvoort. Mick's future. He was very non-committal. What did he say to the German press?
They can't lose Zeb and Mick the same day. It's going to be colossal catastrophe, as we say in Germany.
Well, you ask what Mick said about his future. Actually, nothing. Because he's never talking about his future. And what do you expect from a driver to say about his future? And everything we've learned the last weeks in Formula 1 is that it doesn't matter what they say about future and contracts, because they're all lying to you. So because if you think of what Daniel Ricciardo said, that he's staying at McLaren, what McLaren said there. So
has Mick done enough to stay in Formula 1?
I would say definitely yes. Not because I'm German, not because his name is Schumacher. I think just he's not outstanding, but he's really, really good. And what are the other options? I mean, if you would have someone of Oscar's caliber in Formula 2 or somewhere there you can put in the car, then probably you could discuss. But what are the other options? I mean, we're talking about Daniel Ricciardo.
Well, Ricciardo is being linked to the reserve drive at Mercedes for next year. Yeah. But I think what would interest Daniel in that isn't the simulator work at Brackley at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night. It's the prospect of maybe Lewis Hamilton retiring and then him stepping in. But I'm not sure why Mercedes would go for Daniel on his current form, when I think the moment Lewis Hamilton retires, they'll have pretty much every driver on the grid ringing them.
Yeah, so that's the Daniel Ricciardo part. He said he's not too proud to be a reserve driver, whatever, Daniel. So that's his side, but I wouldn't see him at Haas as perfect fit. So what is the other option for Haas then? Antonio Giovinazzi, he has had 3 years in Formula 1 already. He's done okay, but not great. So Mick has done okay or good. So I would say they are pretty equal, but Mick only had 1.5 seasons so far, and Antonio already had 3 seasons. So when you look at Mick's career in junior categories, it was always the case that he needed a bit more time than some other super talents, but then the second year he was there. So that's why I would definitely go with Mick, and he seems to be a pretty nice guy to work with. The team dynamics at Haas are always a bit, because some people say it's not a fit between him and Günther, but if you think back, was it a fit between Günther and Romain Grosjean, fit between Günther and Kevin Magnus in the past? He's just
Does anyone fit with Günther?
I don't want to say anything bad about him, because he's just so straightforward that in our modern world, it sounds like everything he says sounds like a big argue, but it isn't meant to be like that. So that's why I wouldn't say that it's not working with him and Mick. It wasn't working with him and Romain. It wasn't working with him and Kevin in the past as well. And Kevin is still at the team, or again at the team. So.
Yeah, and Günther is a straight shooter, isn't he? And I think if you're not performing as a driver, he says things that you don't want to hear. And in the press conference earlier this weekend, he said, yes, Mick has been really good at 3 races this year.
Yeah, actually, I had a one-to-one interview with him on Thursday. And he said, before making our decision, we want to know how good, you know, Mick is. Like, what is his ultimate ceiling? And they say at the moment, I don't know if it's Silverstone, Austria, or Canada for sure. But then if it's Monte Carlo or Jeddah, it's below average. I guess his qualifying this weekend was great. His race was, you know, I'd say unraveled after that poor pit stop from Hub. So it's very hard.
He was longer in the pits than in the points.
Exactly. At least, you know, Carlos Sainz had a longer pit stop, so maybe he can take some solace in that. Or Yuki Tsunoda for half a minute in there doing whatever. But for Mick, let's say there are less talented drivers on the grid at the moment than Mick. So I wouldn't be shocked if he stays.
So the top 10 looks like this. Max Verstappen wins at home for the second year in a row, his 10th win of this 2022 season. George Russell's second, his best result of the season so far. And Charles Leclerc is third, his first podium since the Austrian Grand Prix. Lewis Hamilton was fourth, Sergio Perez fifth, Fernando Alonso sixth, making it 10 points finishes in a row for him. Lando Norris seventh, Carlos Sainz eighth, Esteban Ocon ninth in the second Alpine. And Lance Stroll rounded out the top 10 in 10th place. We don't have much time to breathe before the next race. It's the third race in this triple header. We're going to Monza in Italy. Christian, what happens for you between now and then? Why are you laughing?
Because I'm going back to my hometown for one day, and there is a nice festival. It's very similar to Oktoberfest. It's called Duld.
That sounds fun. What's going on in the Biot household?
Well, it's I'm coming back home to see my lovely wife and my lovely daughter, who is 13 months. I was actually on parenting leave for the past 8 months, so this was my first race back. So I miss them dearly. I'm going to give them a big kiss. And Jean-Michel, my lovely colleague from Auto Hebdo, will take over for Monza, where I'm sure there'll be many more stories to decipher and to go through.
And a Max Verstappen victory again, or can Ferrari do anything about them?
I remember that 2019 Charles Leclerc victory at Monza. That was so great. So I hope for Ferrari and for Formula One that Ferrari does well on their home soil, because just like here is a tremendous atmosphere. When you go at Monza and you see all the Tifosi and Ferrari is doing well, this is something as a fan you should experience.
Ferrari, Monza.
It's going to be a difficult one, I guess. If you look at Spa, they weren't great there. But then Spa is always about the compromise between drag and downforce. For Sector 2, you need the downforce. They will definitely put on the smaller wing, but I'm convinced that it won't be great for them. The Red Bull will be pretty strong there,
I think. I assume. All roads lead to Red Bull at Monza, don't they?
Alpine have a strong engine. They were pretty good at Spa, as far as I can remember. So
simulation say Fernando P7, and he will.
No, he will be P3. Yeah, exactly. Probably, it will be the best race of his career.
Let's hope the race at Monza is as exciting as what we've seen here at Zandvoort this weekend. And we will, of course, be back on Monday, the 12th of September, to bring you all of the news from the paddock at Monza. And thank you to Julian and to Christian and to Allard as well for their input this week. It's been fabulous. And thank you to you at home for listening as well. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios.